everybody. It's me. So I have... I think it's fairly well known that I have trouble sleeping a little bit. I go on about it. I think I've talked about it on the air. And, well, I recently realized that my understanding of Islam was not what it used to be. Like, a lot of it just sort of fell in out of my head. So I started reading about it on Wikipedia the last few weeks. And I've discovered that, well, if I want to fall asleep, that's what I do. And then I realized that at some point I had stopped reading about Islam and had started reading about, like, comic books. And didn't really understand the difference, because Islam is like a really integrated religion. It's like there's a lot of links in the history. It's like, you know, with Christianity, it's like the whole thing is one religious group tells another religious group, yeah, I'm done with you. And then they start their own religion, where there seems to be like this whole like branching thing. And so it all sort of melded in my head where, you know, Muhammad died and he gave this one guy the power over the religion, but other people didn't like it because of the secret wars, and so they became the Twelvers. And then on Earth 616, they decided they would be the Shia, but that had something to do with Superman. And then Superman opened up a new school of jurisprudence that's popular in Oman. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. That's what's going on in my head. What's going on in yours, Tyson?
I don't know what the heck just happened. There was about seven words I understood.
That's not a joke I would make when Mike was on the show. I'll just put it that way.
We would still be here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. How are you, Dan?
I am well.
That's good. That's good. Ah, yeah. It's a pretty exciting week for Ask an Atheist, and not just because I'm here. We have a new domain. We've actually changed the name of our... We've changed the sacred name of our website. It's kind of weird. When we started Ask an Atheist... almost 8 years ago now, we were a TV show for about two of those years, or no, for about six of those months,
right.
Or two of those seasons is what I meant to say. And then we went to radio because the TV station, nobody wanted to spend city money on hardcore porn and conspiracy theories, which tells me that the city of Seattle does not have its things in order.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned. We've been on radio ever since, and our website has always been askanatheist.tv, and then we'd have to stop and explain to people that we're not actually a TV show anymore. That's really, oh God, this is good. And I have to have a history of the show every time we gave away our website. So as of this week, our new URL is atheist.radio, new TLD specifically for radio, and we spent not insignificant amount of money to get this pretty cool domain.
$1 billion.
Yeah,
right.
$1 billion Zimbabwean dollars, which we'll talk about later. So if you want to go to askanatheist.tv, it'll still take you right to our website, but our domain name, and it's going to take me roughly 10 years to change this in my brain, our new website is atheist.radio.
I love it. All right.
Yeah. Speaking of Islam and not comic books, the United Arab Emirates unveiled plans to send a probe and ultimately colonize Mars at the Dubai Air Show this week. In addition to a probe, the UAE exhibited plans to eventually grow fruit and vegetables on the red planet. Officials point to the small country's prime launch location and its experience with desalinization and other infrastructural issues in the desert nation as useful experience for Martian conditions. Also, they have a money, like tons of the stuff. I don't know if you caught this I saw it on BBC while I was at a bar, because that's how I get my news.
Hold on one second. What bar were you in that was playing the BBC?
The Forum.
Oh.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. That kind of works. It's called The Forum. They have the BBC.
Yeah, but they also do the beer pong.
The beer. They also had the painting going on in the back.
Yeah, right.
So the fireplace was off, which was the only reason we went to the bar. It was like really cold and damp, and so we were going to go there.
Warm up by the fireplace.
Yeah, and like I wanted to go where else? I always go to Doyle's, but right. I want to go where the fire is. I'm like, all right. Mm-hmm. And the fire was out. Like, can we go to Doyle's? No, we're committed.
We're already here.
Yeah. Grumble.
Do they serve chowder in a bread bowl?
I don't know. Chowder.
That's next best thing. They got a bar with a fireplace. That's, you know, nice and toasty warm. Get a bar that serves chowder in a bread bowl. You're golden.
They've got, like the cake lollipops? that people really like.
Yep.
Pretend it's that, but it's with corn dogs.
Oh, the little mini corn dog thingies?
Yeah, pretty good.
So like it's like a corn meatball.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah, except it's definitely of the hot dog variety.
Oh.
Of the hot dog variety will possibly be my my biography.
Of the hot dog variety.
Yeah. So, I mean, the cool thing is that you've got a country, all right, with questionable moral values. Let's just get that out there. But,
hey, but women can drive now.
Oh, they can?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not Saudi Arabia where the robot women don't have to wear,
right.
Which just opens up all sorts of strange.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what?
Oh, you didn't hear about this.
I missed something.
There was some sort of, all right, well, okay, I'm setting the Martian thing aside for a minute.
Okay.
We'll come back to that. But a few months ago in Saudi Arabia, they had some sort of press conference with some robot technology company where they had an animatronic woman robot that she was just a robot woman. Like, she wasn't wearing, like, clothing. Well, I mean, she was wearing, like, I mean, she was a robot.
It's a robot.
Yeah.
Robot clothes.
Right.
Yeah. Which Saudi Arabia, as part of, I guess, a publicity stunt, gave her Saudi citizenship.
Uh-huh. Right.
So think about what that means for a gynoid.
So does she have
in Saudi Arabia
cover her head?
Which she didn't.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The robot woman has more rights than actual sentient women.
Actual women.
Yeah. And this robot wasn't, I don't know that this robot would pass a Turing test, so I don't know if
it's
sentient. Yeah. Just let that sink in for a minute.
Okay. That's kind of staggering.
Only guess is that the men of Saudi Arabia don't find this robot sexually appetizing, therefore they don't have to. I don't know where to go with this, and I might have to cut that because that was really gross.
Uh-huh,
but that's the questions that come to you, right?
Uh-huh. All right. Didn't come to me, but
well, why do in Islam, you know, what's the excuse that like the Taliban gave and the Saudis, the Wahhabists occasionally give for having to cover the women? It's to basically keep the men in line.
Keep the men in check. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get I know what you were saying.
Yeah, that's where I'm going. So this Martian thing, I'm finally going to get an answer to my question.
What's your question?
When you're on Mars, where do you point when you pray? Because I'm not going to pretend that there aren't Muslims in space, because that, you know, that's not going to be a thing, because that's already happened.
That's much your favorite book, right?
Yeah, it's going to be. Yeah.
It already is.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's the religion of the Fremen is more syncretic than that. It's got bits of Zen. It's got bits of Islam, third Islam, in fact. And then it's got other parts of Zen, you know, of weird Christianity, not Zen Christianity, because that's for the books that shall not be named. And, yeah, I can go on. It sounds like I'm making fun of Muslims for that. I'm actually intensely curious as a fan of Dune, I'm not going to pretend religion isn't going to be gone by the time we're colonizing space.
Right.
So I want to know how that works.
I'm
going to really
make my first billion by mining asteroids to create gyroscopic prayer mats that automatically point towards Mecca no matter where you are in space.
Yeah. You see,
so you pick up, you,
I think
you
that might be making
mat.
Fun of people.
I don't think it is.
I think that's a very capitalistic way of approaching
it. Well, yeah, that's very American of you.
Yes. And American capitalists in the Middle East are unanimously loved.
We've done really well so far.
No problems there.
This has been Ask an
Atheist. Yeah, this has been Ask an Atheist. Yeah, I'm going to go hang out with Salman Rushdie. I'm actually curious about the answer to that question. I've gotten some answers on the show when I've asked it before from other atheists. Like, I don't know what the answer is, but I suspect it might be like this. I want a ruling. Where would you, I think maybe you'd have to set up some sort of like prayer, like reflector network where you would have
like a satellite dish for prayers.
Right. You would have a spot on the planet and then you'd pray in that direction. Then it would be like representative and then would have something pointing towards Earth or something like that. I think how you do it.
I had Dish TV for a while, man, and that service was terrible. So I can imagine how the prayers are going to come through.
Fair.
It's all garbled. One thing that I thought of immediately when we talked about, you know, Islam on Mars, it's going to have to change the flag and add another moon.
And you're going to have to make them really, really small.
Yeah, and one of them's kind of potato-shaped. It's not perfectly round. You know?
That's true. So we've got an email, and it's a bit of an off-topic email. This is Charles from Seattle, and he says, I know it seems a bit off-topic, but I don't know many Tacoma people yet, so I thought I'd ask you folks. If Tacoma reaches 300,000 people and qualifies for a monorail initiative, where do you think it would go? Anybody want to get the Simpsons reference in right away? Or
monorail?
Monorail.
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 What's the name?
Monorail. Monorail.
One more time?
Monorail.
All right.
There we go. Okay. public transportation in the greater Seattle-Tacoma area is a mess.
It's pretty good.
Is it?
No.
No. Okay.
Have you been to any other large city?
It's pretty bad.
This guy, Tyson spends more time in Chicago than I do.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Yeah.
Chicago has like some of the best public transit I've ever seen.
Oh, Chicago. And like I've also spent a lot of time in the New York and New Jersey area. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You can get anywhere, anytime of day.
Well, public transit in New York will get you to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
It's all pretty integrated there.
Yeah.
We're here. We've got like a railway system, but it only works during rush hours. And
I
hold is essentially useless unless you're the small portion of the population that has a standard hour job, or you're a Sounders fan, in which case it's fine.
No, not even then.
Oh, really? That got screwed up too?
Yeah. They only run it to games. So we have 17 home games a year.
Uh-huh.
Maybe four.
Oh,
or
lame.
Five. Yeah.
Super
it's awful.
Lame. And then they've got the South Lake Union trolley.
Yes,
which goes
the South Lake Union trolley.
Yeah, which goes through like from about the airport to places south in the south bits of Seattle.
Right, it runs along South Lake Union.
Right,
right. And I don't think it goes to the airport.
Yeah.
Oh, then what goes to the airport?
That's the link.
The link. Light
the link.
Rail. Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all kinda...
not to be confused with the link light rail here.
Right. Yeah. And then in Tacoma we have the T link, which just goes up and down Pacific.
Right, but it is expanding up to the hospital.
Yeah, it's going to go...
The Laundry Basket Hospital?
Yes.
You mean the one next to my house?
Yeah.
You mean they're going to be tearing up the streets while we're trying to record episodes of Ask an Atheist?
No, it's going to go up Division.
It's going to
go
it's going up Division.
Yeah, it's going to go
all the way
down.
Okay, I heard it was going to go up 19.
It's going to go up St. Helens and that way.
No. For those who aren't from the area, there is a hospital here that looks like a giant laundry basket.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with the quality of their care. It's just the architecture looks like a giant laundry basket.
And given that you don't have to try very hard to find out, I live next to it.
Uh-huh. Right.
So, it's a great navigational aid for the city. Just, I live next to the laundry basket. It's fine.
Yeah. Just look up.
But I think it would just go, I would link up to the T-Link, I would think.
That's what I would think, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, does the South Lake Union trolley actually connect to the link? Is there... Because it feels like there's an interlock there.
No, the South Lake Union trolley does not connect to it.
Okay.
It runs independently on its own tracks.
Is it still called the South Lake Union trolley?
It is still called the South Lake Union trolley.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. So...
and none of the three things in Seattle, the South Lake Union trolley, the Link Light Rail... or the monorail actually overlap.
No.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre.
You cannot get from one to the other easily.
Right.
There's a bus somewhere in between or a lot of
There walking. Is a bus somewhere in between, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know one time I got, I had a lot of fun at a Sounders game and had to go into a secret underground cave to get the bus to the...
Oh, the tunnel.
The tunnel.
Yeah.
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 Uh-huh. What's going on there?
That's us being ingenious.
Okay.
Just don't breathe,
out of
just,
land.
Just don't breathe too much
so
stuff
just
there.
Go downstairs.
Just no, I understand.
Buses idling in a tunnel.
Right. I understand building underground. I mean, Chicago is kind of a dual-layered city, which is how you get the Batman movies.
Right.
Oh, wait, what?
Oh.
Superhero day.
Is Gotham filmed in Chicago?
A fair chunk of the Christopher Nolan Batman films were filmed, like a lot of the driving action scenes were filmed on Lower Wacker and like the lower parts of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got sort of the upper streets where, you know, standard traffic happens, buses, cars, trucks, pedestrian traffic goes. And then you have kind of like an underground city for most of the major thoroughfares, which is for trucking and shipping and like where a lot of the commercial stuff happens. So that's how that goes. So we also have an update. This is a blueprint via comment about something last week. The Day of Rage in Jerusalem was canceled last Saturday morning, sadly, due to disagreement on how it should be executed.
They weren't mad enough.
They weren't mad enough. Well, apparently. Interest did not break 1,000 people, And the disagreement was mainly about taking the short demonstration into ultra-Orthodox territory. The argument that it would be an unnecessary provocation. So, no day of rage, but the weekly protest against the religious subgroup that terrorizes secular parts of in Jerusalem continued. Last week, stones were thrown, even without the protest, and only a few people were there to document what the religious people would do after several months of secular presence blocking their disturbance. So, I don't know. Did you guys hear last week's episode?
Yes.
Okay. So, can you explain the day of rage?
Nope.
Okay.
I didn't understand it then. I don't understand it now.
Well, it sounded like a counter-protest, and it's... I'm just surprised the secular parts of Jerusalem. I'm just going to come out and say it.
I don't know who put the part about the stone throwing in there, but that was brilliant, by the way.
Well,
did we get any juggalos to come out and counter-protest the Day of Rage?
They're still trying to figure out about magnets, my friend.
Well, my question is, if the secularists weren't there, but the religious people were still there throwing rocks at them, who were they throwing rocks at?
Yeah.
I imagine if I pay attention to what happens on my show, I might have an answer to that. But I like to think that they had like a chalk outline of atheists be here. And they're like, screw you.
Stand here.
Yeah. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Our website is atheist.radio. We're going to go to the break, and after we come back, we'll be talking about coffee makers, schools, RVs, creepiness, that sort of thing.
Billy! Billy! I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it will explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Welcome back! This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Atheist.radio is our URL. I'm not going to make that part of my standard introduction. I'm just doing it now to remind myself more than you, and I forgot that things have changed and we only have one commercial in the break now. Whoopsies! Fun times. Anyway, schools. How about schools?
Schools are good.
All right. Hudsonville Public Schools in Michigan ended a lunchtime Bible study led by fifth grade teacher Christopher Carroll. The district ended the discussions after anonymous complaints were received, represented by the Michigan Association of Civil Rights. According to the superintendent of the school district, Carroll held two discussions at the request of two students, with attendance eventually growing to around 40. The study was not compulsory. However, the complaint alleges that one student was singled out for not attending. Carroll had current law explained to him, but was otherwise undisciplined. This was the second violation for the district in 2 years. In 2015, Bible Club Ministries International held a club during school hours in an RV parked in a school parking lot.
Red flag.
Red flags.
Yeah.
I get that they wanted a place, like, before we talk about this guy here, the new one.
Yeah.
The old one, really quick.
Yeah. Let's talk about this a little bit. Let's unpack this.
As they were trying to figure out how do we get to these children, they're like, well, we'll just rent an RV and have them come join us inside. No. That won't spark any suspicions.
You
know,
if you go on Craigslist and look at, I'm sure it was, it was even worse than this. If you go on Craigslist and look in the free section, you can find RVs. And I'm thinking, well, we can't do it on the school grounds. We need an RV, but we got no money. Mm-hmm. So let's like get a free RV from Craigslist, like this moldy, greasy RV with perhaps a poster on the side with pictures of candy on it, and we'll bring it to the school.
Well, if you're getting a free Craigslist RV, it probably already has pictures of candy.
Yeah, probably. And then we'll just park it next to the school and say Bible study inside.
Oh, dear. this whole thing has gone horribly wrong.
Where did you think this was going to go? You are not you, Dan. Sorry.
Not me.
Hypothetical you.
The royal you.
Hypothetical you wants to indoctrinate children in a school into your weird religion that apparently in modern day condones child molestation. Huh. So
yeah.
You rent an RV and park it next to a school with a sign saying free Bible classes inside.
Uh-huh.
And you have it during lunch.
That's weird, right? Yeah, yeah.
So this is...
And I thought having the crash cars on drunk driving day was bad enough, man. Jeez.
So what are you asking a kid to do in this instance? If they want to come to the Bible study, they have to come during their lunch.
Right.
So are you cutting into the students' break time during the day in order to provide the service?
I think it's supposed to be, they're supposed to give up their lunch to go to this Bible study, is I think what it was supposed to be.
It was taking place during the lunch break.
It was taking place, yeah.
During the lunch break.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's what, thus the free candy. Because right. they're not, they're obviously not, yeah.
Let's be clear now. We made up free candy, right? this isn't part of the story. We made this
free
up.
Candy.
Okay.
If I'm proven wrong, I'll back out. I'll admit to being wrong, but I'm going with it.
You're running with free candy.
Right.
I've done events like these back when I was in the church. I guarantee there was free candy in there.
Yeah.
Not in an RV. Not at a school. I feel like I need to clarify a few things here.
Right, and I'm the guy who was taken across state lines. I think I've made that clear in the interviews. I was not touched inappropriately when they kidnapped me.
Man.
But there was free candy.
There's always free
there
candy.
There was free candy. And paper airplanes, and a guy from World War II.
I feel so ripped off. My evangelical church, when I was a teenager, did none of this stuff. We didn't have free candy. We didn't have RVs in the park.
No face painting?
They had sort of a weird vendetta against Mormons and Asians, which was weird because there were Asians in the congregation, but...
All right. Fork. What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was two separate categories of people, right? Mormon slash Asians, right? Not Mormon Asians.
No, you didn't have to be both.
Okay.
No, they had a thing against Mormons and also Asians. And I mean, obviously,
right,
it was obviously an evangelical
Mormons,
church.
Right.
Obviously, they had
let's
a thing
take those
against
one
gays
at a time.
Too, but...
What was the... Mormons, not real Christians. Is that? I assume that's where that was going?
Like they have been deceived and they're following a false prophet
kind of
thing.
That whole third book thing.
Yeah.
Asians, however, that's a little stranger.
It was relatively subtle.
Okay.
Perhaps if you were
benign racism.
If you were a white person over 55, you probably wouldn't notice.
Okay.
But
which was not a small population.
Yeah, they just kind of talked like it was, right after the end of World War II.
Okay.
Okay. And how does so I imagine if you're an Asian Mormon, that would go bad.
Oh, you're full on blacklisted.
Yeah.
No candy for you.
Now, how do these two things interlock into a lack of free candy and RVs at your church?
They don't actually have anything to do with the free candies or RVs. I just thought, you guys are talking about all the cool, fun stuff that your churches did.
Oh, yeah.
Free candy indoctrinations and kidnapping across state lines. I guess I was just feeling a little left out.
I mean, if you've got nothing going on this week, we could head to Portland, man.
I'm going to say no, but only because
answer.
That makes it fun, right?
Yeah.
If I say yes, then you're not kidding.
I'm not going to do it.
But Dan, free candy. All right, returning to the parent now. Yeah. You know what? You know how much money the churches and these groups have. It's probably not a free Craigslist.
Right. No.
RV. No. That I will disclaim, and I'll say that was my own invention.
Right.
The free candy, I am sticking with.
I'm going to go with it too.
Yeah. Nope. They thought this was a good idea and it wouldn't look bad at all, is what it was.
And they got in trouble.
And they got in trouble.
18 months ago, something like that now.
Yeah, back in 2015.
Okay, yeah.
And now, all right, so that's that. And that was bad. Also, whoa, creepy.
Right. Yep.
Now, returning to today. The teacher who did this Christopher guy, Christopher Carroll, he thought it was okay because he didn't do it during instruction time.
Right.
But he was still on the clock as a teacher. He was doing it during lunch hour, and he was inviting students to it, so the student-teacher relationship was still in full effect. And in this context, this teacher is a representative of the government and is indoctrinating children into specific religions in a government that demands secular, or rather non-sectarian, behavior from representatives of the government. Somebody who has a degree, assuming in something,
right,
and assuming it's not from a Bible college,
could be.
This, I don't know. Our Bible colleges aren't really accredited for that sort
of
thing.
Some of them are.
Some of them are.
Yeah.
So a teacher or a representative of the government can't lead students in prayer.
Right. And
correct.
They can't...
Can they lead them in a Bible study?
No.
Not at all.
Not at all.
No.
Okay.
They can't. They cannot be a part of it. Now, they can be there as a, depending on the school district and what they allow, they can be there as a... Like somebody who's holding the room for them, but they cannot be leading or instructing or having anything to do with the course at all.
Okay.
They can just be a person that's there to make sure, like, when you guys are done, I'm going to lock the door.
Right.
Right. So where do you draw the line there if you have, like, so let's say there's a public school and they've got a social studies program. They're going to study world religions.
Uh-huh.
So if you want to study the scripture.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
It's being told what to believe. It's the indoctrination component.
Okay.
You're allowed to teach world religions. You're even allowed to teach the Bible as literature in educational institutions. Although I would be against it because that's clearly, you know, the pointy end of the stick at that point.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you're even allowed to pray in school. This idea that you're
of
not
course.
Allowed to pray in school is crap.
No, just teachers can't lead it.
Teachers
correct.
Can't lead it. Yeah. It must be student led. And that was the problem here, is that it was the teacher leading the Bible study. It was the teacher
reading
showing Christian
right.
videos.
Oh, I see.
Reading
okay.
scripture
there we go.
And leading the students in prayer.
That right. is
which
the,
were,
that's the detail I was looking
yeah,
for.
Yeah, and this teacher had to be told that that might be a bad idea. That
which,
that,
which
after the RV incident.
After which, the RV incident.
It, well, it brings up two things. One, was he a member of this school district when that RV thing happened? Because I guarantee after that thing, the school district hammered out a long letter to all of the faculty saying, you better make sure you understand what the law is.
I live with a teacher. Yeah. I don't know if I've made this clear.
Yeah.
I live with a school teacher.
I've heard it.
Teachers are worse gossips than students. There is no way.
As a person who regularly frequents teachers' lounges, I can confirm that 1,000,000,000%.
They are the worst. And I guarantee you that this guy had heard about the creepy RV
right,
incident.
Right.
And it was probably called the creepy RV incident. Probably what it was.
Well, and the second thing is that I have a problem with this being during the school day. I don't think you're allowed to do that during the school day at all, even if it's a break.
Yeah.
Like a lunch break. I think it has to be an extracurricular after school activity. You can't have, you know, the football team going to practice at lunch.
Right.
Yeah.
That's after school. Right.
Yeah. Right.
So, I mean, he should have known on those grounds, like, well, I can't run a course in the middle of the school day because it makes it look like school now.
Yeah.
Right.
So circling back to that thing you said before, the question you had about, you know, what you can teach as far as religion goes in an educational environment. There was actually a conversation I had with Becky about a week or two ago about religious, you know, education about religion in public schools, which something that happened to me that apparently had been kind of edited out of education where Becky was, or by the time Becky was in the same grade.
Mm-hmm.
And that was being taught world history and religions in world history. And, you know, you would start with like the Babylonian polytheism and mm-hmm. polytheism in, like, you know, in Greece. And sometimes you would get to polytheism on the Arabian Peninsula or whatever. Eventually my teachers would always say, my world history teachers, especially in high school, would always get to the point to the introduction of monotheisms, Zoroastrianism, Judaism, Christianity, later Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And they would always talk about how great monotheism was, this big revolution in religions, and monotheisms were just vastly superior to polytheisms because they allowed, you know, propagation of whatever and you know, sort of going even a little bit into the religions of the book argument. Did this happen to you guys?
No.
Wow. So it may have just been a specific teacher then for
possibly.
Me. I don't know. Because I remember that specifically my world most saliently in my freshman year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
My world history teacher was like that. And, but it sort of occurred, in my K-12, you know, and before that,
right.
in my K-6 years, like in fourth and fifth grade, I had a teacher who would talk like that.
And
that's a fairly subtle indoctrination.
Right.
If you think about it.
Remember all those other religions people used to practice? The current one
were.
Is the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the modern ones are the better ones.
Buy the new iPhone 10. Wink.
And the funny thing is, though, that I think my opinion is now like exactly 180 degrees from that, is that the polytheisms might have been better for what they were talking about.
They don't seem to organize long enough to slaughter anybody.
Well, not necessarily true. The Romans were pretty good at it, and that's not
and
even...
they got better at it when they became monotheistic.
Yeah. Yeah. But then you can look at that sort of the religion on this half of the globe during the same time. I'd say there was sort of equitable slaughter between the monotheisms and the polytheisms in the
counting?
Balance.
Who's keeping count?
But the thing is, you know, if you've got if you've got gods for everything, or gods by the pound, gods by the bushel, that's a quote.
I just get him in Costco, a big vacuum pack.
And you go to somewhere else that's also a polytheism. This is something the Greeks and Romans actually did, where they go, what god is that? Like, especially in Egypt, what god is that? What does that do? That kind of sounds like one of our gods that does that. We're going to leave that alone. We're not going to touch that. Where when you get to the later monotheisms, what are you worshiping in there? No! You know. I'm not saying the polytheisms were more moral. Right. Actually, I might
Your
be.
God has the head of a crocodile? Yeah. No, our true God has the head of an alligator. Don't be ridiculous.
Right. I'm not suggesting a moral superiority for polytheisms. I'm just saying, for the purpose for which they were, I was told that monotheisms were better, I don't think they were.
Right.
I don't know.
Fair.
Just an aside. I was hoping... I'd love to hear some feedback about this, because I remember being taught this. I remember it being drilled pretty deep into my head back in the day.
Mm.
And I just sort of assumed that American education in that era was like that. And you just, you know, it was just what you did. And, but now that I'm talking to other people, it's like nobody's ever heard of this.
Right.
It's a bit strange.
I think you just had a
I grew up on the coast. You know, even in the 1980s, it was still pretty blue here. So
I grew up on an island that was pretty progressive. So
so it's November. So it's everybody's talking about Christmas now.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, to be honest, they were talking about Christmas several months ago. Oh, come on, guys. We talked about this.
This is why we have not installed the camera in the studio. Right?
We're going to talk about Christmas now.
No, we're not. We're actually, well, you know, I guess I need to say that I'm a general in the war on Christmas.
Oh.
I say general in the most Star Warsiest sense of the word.
I'm generally involved with the war on Christmas.
Because... you know, everybody got to be a general, and I have idea what, like, they didn't seem to be commanding, like Han Solo commanded, like, six people, and that made him a general.
General Jar Jar Binks.
General
Jar Jar. But, you know, it was a pretty small rebellion.
Really?
I don't know. I'm just, compared to the rest of the universe. You know that I'm a Star Wars apologist. I'm
always going
to be a Star Wars apologist. You come up with something weird about Star Wars, and I will try to explain it in a way that makes sense.
Ooh. I don't need it explained. General Solo just sounded cool. And I imagine that's why they did it. I need no further explanation.
But
I'm okay with that.
But shouldn't he be an admiral?
No, because he didn't even control ships.
Oh.
Yeah, even like when he was General Solo, he was like down on with the Porgs or whatever now.
Ewoks.
Yeah, whatever they're called now.
Whatever the newest cute fluffy toy is.
You know, that was when Lando was flying the Millennium Falcon.
Right.
He didn't even qualify as an admiral, and he appeared to be a general of about six people.
So he's a general in the Salvation Army.
I'm trying to link this to the solstice things coming up, and I'm just having a real hard time doing it. So I'm just going to stop pretending.
No bridge.
Humanists of Washington and Seattle atheists, along with the University Unitarian Humanists, cordially invite freethinkers and their families and friends from Seattle and beyond to celebrate the coming winter solstice with our annual solstice potluck.
Life Day potluck.
Life Day potluck, Saturday, December 9th, 2017, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the University Unitarian Church at 6556 35th Avenue Northeast, Seattle, Washington. Children are a welcome and essential part of this celebration. We'll have some craft activities for them and welcome teens who wish to help facilitate and assist. Please assist, please, with this. This year, we are encouraging attendees to bring new socks to donate to Treehouse, an organization benefiting foster youth in the greater Seattle area, and feminine hygiene products to benefit women and girls at Cascade Aid Women's Program, Hammond House Women's Program, and Hope Link. And I notice in the official in the official release, we're not mentioning it, but I think we're working with
Satanic Temple.
The Satanic Temple on that one. I always hesitate just a little bit because I want to make sure I get the right group there because they don't get along at all. One of them's kind of nuts, and the other one's pretty cool. And I always want to talk about the cool one and not the nutty one that's now kind of led by racists. And Church of Satan.
Oh, yeah.
The Anton LaVey guys. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Kind of went down a road.
Sure, you've heard of them.
I've heard of them. I didn't know that it had gone down a road.
Mm. Yeah.
They're not really people I keep in touch with. So,
no.
You know.
And there's good reasons for it. They're not, I'm not saying if you're in the, well, I'm, why am I apologizing for people in the, what the, I'm not doing it.
Don't defend them.
Yeah. Yeah, defend yourself on your own shows.
You do not have to tip the dinner theater
atheist. I do not have to.
It was included in the price of admission.
The heck am I, it's been a while since I've been on the show. I don't know what's going on. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842, atheist.radio. We're going to go to the break. When we come back, we're going to talk about creepiness and coffee makers.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And that thing we were talking about before the break, that's not the only solstice thing we're doing this year. We're also going to be at the Tri-Cities. This year, the crew and co-hosts of Ask an Atheist will be special guests at the Tri-City Freethinker Solstice Celebration. We'll update about our plans as they unfold, but expect the full production team, including Sam Mulvey, Rebecca Friedman, Meredith Taylor, Wes Benetti, and regular host Josh. More info is found by joining the Tri-City Freethinkers at meetup.com or at tricityfreethinkers.org. I'm looking forward to that. It's the first time I've done a live anything in several years.
Yeah,
so,
it's been a while.
Yeah.
The road trip was last, yeah?
Yeah, it was 2013. No, yeah. I did. I went to South Dakota for something, but we never aired that because I used...
I remember that now.
Yeah, we did an episode called... Or we did a podcast called Not a Eulogy for an Episode because I thought I was going to be able to save it. I wasn't able to save it. So it turns out it was a eulogy for an episode, and I lied. Viewers of Sean Hannity's television show started smashing Keurig-branded coffee makers after the manufacturer removed advertising from his show. Keurig removed advertising in response to outrage over Hannity's sloppy face licking of Roy Moore in response to repeated allegations of child molestation. Hannity has now called on his viewers to end the Butlerian jihad, but it is unclear if Keurig commercials would return to the show. I know Sam doesn't parse when he cold reads, but he also wrote this and will forget by showtime. Keurigs are a vendor lock-in trap that automates something every American four-year-old can do, but only one cup at a time with non-recyclable ecological nightmare pods that spurn out burned gray water. Fox News aficionados are smashing these things as an attack on liberals. Awesome.
Before we do anything.
All right.
Is it Keurig or Keurig?
I don't know.
Seriously, because a lot of people totally pronounce it both ways.
I'm rubbing my hands together scheming now because I want to know what other ways we can trick conservatives into inadvertently being environmentalists. What other horribly wasteful machines can we get them to smash?
Yeah.
This is going to be great.
Let's start with their pickup trucks.
How do we turn them against oil?
This is one of those...
You know, it comes from the Middle East.
Okay. Yeah. This is one of those things where I'm seeing everybody go, you know, I imagine somewhere there are people like us who are going, wait, they're smashing those single-use vendor lock-in like pieces of junk?
Yeah.
Yay. I imagine if you listen to the show, you probably said that. But on my Facebook wall, it was the usual fear-mongering, how violent Fox News viewers were. And I'm like, what? No, I mean, you know, I'll participate. I'll go to Goodwill. I'll buy a Keurig for, $4 or however much. I'll hit it with a bat, whatever. I don't care.
Office Space style.
Yeah.
It's the first thing that comes to mind. I don't really think about, like, you know, that whole Office Space scene and smashing the copier as really having much to do with, like, Rush Limbaugh and the conservative agenda.
No, no. Isn't, like, latte kind of like a joke thing?
Right.
Like,
yeah,
a joke trope.
That's one of those things that they use to, like, mock liberals. They're like, yes. Oh, those latte sipping guys from the coast. I'm like, well, we just found out how many of you have Keurigs at home. So it's like every time they talk out against, you know, homosexuals, and then it turns out that that guy who was the loudest voice about it was,
oh, that happened this week. How did that not make it into the notes?
Stuff going on with that dude.
Holy cats, that's not in the notes at all.
Yeah, I know, every time though, whoever was the loudest one is the one who was, you know, was
yeah.
So now we found all these guys with their Keurigs. You know. Well, what other stuff do they hate? Are they still, you know, hiding in the...
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm about 3 minutes from, as soon as we get done with this show, smashing my Keurig, too.
You have one?
I've had them for years.
Do you
I use it every single day.
Do you?
Yeah. I love it.
Do you know?
I'm going to be on the opposite side of the table here.
Explain this!
All right.
Yeah.
Word. Explain this thing.
Tell me you're using a reusable filter and not just the cups.
Nope. I throw them away every day. Two of them.
Best. All right, Dan.
Two. Oh,
Dan.
That's okay.
Go.
we're gonna be on opposite sides of the table. We will never find common ground on this one.
This is precisely the thing you usually like start like digging in.
Go ahead.
Like, Dan, no. Do your biz.
Okay. So, like you said, any 4 year old, any American 4 year old can make coffee, right?
Sure.
How hard is it?
It's not that it's hard. It's that I'm just pure lazy.
Okay. I guess I can accept that. You know, I see people who know better that are still commuting in V8 SUVs.
Right.
Like,
right.
Come on.
Right.
Really?
Right.
But I guess it does come down to personal preference and selfishness and that kind of thing. And
it I'll is just, exactly
it's
that.
It's exactly that.
Yes.
It's personal preference and
correct.
Selfishness.
Yeah.
But you could make it up. You know, by I don't know, joining a tree planting organization or maybe getting involved.
You know,
actually, this is
I'm gonna stop eating meat.
Oh,
too late.
Wait,
oh.
you did that already.
That doesn't count. I'm actually going to disagree with you there
meat.
And saying tree planting is not enough, given that the Keurig pods are made out of Type 7 plastic.
Yeah,
which is non-recyclable.
Right,
correct.
It's not even recyclable.
Yeah,
and. It's filled with organic matter that is better composted to use to grow living things. But there you have these coffee grounds locked up where they can't be used inside this little plastic pot that
won't break
down in the ground and take thousands of years to break apart, assuming we don't bioengineer some sort of petroleum-eating bugs. But that's not the point. The point is that with the knowledge we have, with the technology we have, you're deliberately doing something that is objectively wrong.
Yes.
For your own laziness, for your own selfishness.
Correct, because I can make pumpkin spice latte flavor at home.
Why would you do that?
Now we hit Sam. Here we go. All right, Sam, go.
It's like tag teaming over here.
It's just like bacon. Why these fad flavors, Tyson? Why?
Have you had pumpkin spice latte?
Yes.
Have you had bacon?
Have you had bacon?
Well, it's been a very long time since me and bacon have made company.
Like, do you live like a guild navigator in a pumpkin spice hermetically sealed container?
Here's the thing.
Between the months of September and December?
Oh, I would do it all 12 if they would sell it, my friend.
I am
the most basic person that you can find on the planet. If it says pumpkin on it, I stop reading and buy it.
Basic person? This I don't get.
Basic people who are Ugg wearing... pumpkin spice drinking.
Okay. I ain't got a problem with Uggs.
Fleece
really
wearing. Like, that's it's a generic term.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just hate monopalate diets that the entire American people get forced upon us every, you know, either once a year with pumpkin spice.
Right.
Or every few years with like fads like bacon.
Sure.
Or what's another one? Quinoa everything.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And it's like suddenly everything tastes funny for a while. And I like bacon. Quinoa's a pile.
I like it.
And pumpkin pie is one of my favorite things ever. But I wouldn't want to, unless pumpkin spice products actually allow you to travel without moving. That would be a
thing. There we go.
Yeah.
So like pumpkin melange.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I have been making Dune references this entire time.
That's two.
No,
That's two. Here we go.
Right. Well, a couple of subtler ones. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to keep using my Keurig and eating my pumpkin spice.
Nah, I'm getting a bat.
The only reason I want to break it, to bring it back top,
yeah,
is because it's been leaking water from the bottom of the tank, so I'm actually going to have to go buy a new one.
Well, they're $4 at Goodwill.
It wastes water and plastic.
I knew that was going to get this you.
Damn it.
This is the perfect Keurig. Actually, aren't these vendor lock-in? I mean, it started...
Does it persecute gays, too?
I don't know. I've never asked it. It's personal beliefs.
Does it fondle people over their undergarments? Because right. I guess that would be the link to more here. There's just been a thread of creepy child molestation through all the stories.
Can we cover again why people are smashing their Keurigs? Why the ads got pulled in the first place? Why did Keurig take their ads off of the show?
Okay, Sean Hannity.
Yeah.
Interviewed Roy Moore, who we covered in depth last episode.
Right.
And he was basically a child molestation apologist, where
right.
he was saying, is this where they did the biblical arguments? Is that where that came from? Was it Hannity or?
No, I think that came after.
Okay.
I'm not sure though.
I just remember it being something about Sean Hannity having sexual relations with a 14-year-old. Or, sorry, Roy Moore. Roy Moore having sexual relations with a 14-year-old.
Did the Washington Post send you a check for $5,000? Sorry.
I'm not saying it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Some people
it just
say,
hasn't been on the
people.
News. Okay.
That is, I think, wow.
All right.
If I were a valiant human being, the name of this episode would be Did Sean Hannity molest a 14-year-old? Question mark?
Oh, well, clearly the name of this show is Free Candy.
Yeah, I guess it is, isn't it?
If only this were BuzzFeed, then you could be like, did Sean Hannity molest a 14-year-old? The answer may shock you.
No, probably not.
Not that we know of.
Yeah. I'll even go. I'll say,
that would actually be the shocking answer for me.
That would be. Okay.
Probably not. Oh, really? Wow.
All okay. right. Yeah, so Roy Moore, as we covered extensively
yep.
last week, is under an increasing number of accusations of child molestation while he was an assistant attorney, district attorney
mm-hmm.
in Alabama. And he went on Sean Hannity, which I cannot bring myself to watch, because
you respect your eyeballs?
Yeah, I think that might be it. For an apology and just sort of setting up, he didn't do those things. I don't really even know what the arguments were, and that's what this was about. Is that this was basically a free platform
right.
for Moore to say that people are liars, that
right.
you know that.
And Sean Hannity came to his defense.
What he did was okay, and Sean Hannity, like I said, face looking defense.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people said, a lot of people, because, you know, America is still relatively sane, mm-hmm. despite appearances, thought that was a fairly low thing to do just for the purposes of political ascendancy, and complained to the advertisers, which is time and time again, one of the most effective things you can do for a talk show to get their attention when they're on the wrong path. It's destroyed Rush Limbaugh. Yep. Rush Limbaugh used to own talk radio, and now he's a small part of it.
Mm.
You're never going to bring me down because I have no advertisers.
I'm talking to Peggy. I'm going straight to Peggy.
Peggy, you are not going to believe the accusations they've leveled.
In my defense... I'm also not going to defend child molestation.
Definitely.
That's just not
definitely
something
no.
I'm going
right.
to do.
Yeah.
And so that happened. And because Sean Hannity was angry and Sean Hannity's listeners were angry that liberals were managing to get advertising pulled because Sean Hannity was defending child molestation,
yeah.
they decided that they would take their expensive coffee vendor lock-in nightmare inventions and hit them with bats as if that would somehow make us feel bad.
Do they know that boycotts don't work if you've already purchased the product?
Probably not.
Yeah, like, now you're just smashing your coffee machine for no reason. The money is spent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah. yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that didn't even occur to me. Just, yeah, it's you're smashing. Okay. Fine.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks for buying our coffee machines.
Cool.
I guess when this blows over, you'll probably have to buy another product made by the same company.
Have you seen these, like, just the sheer number of nightmare vendor lock-in devices that they've got now? You've got the Keurig. I think that was the first one, which is the coffee maker.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got, the other two that I'm going to mention have failed.
Yeah, the juicer went down.
The Juicero one.
What's Juicero? I never even heard of this one.
You know how that one guy who was old but really fit, and he would sell you those juicers?
Jack LaLanne.
Remember the Jack LaLanne juicer?
Yeah, the juice tiger.
Think of like that, but instead of putting vegetables in it, you put in Keurig pods.
Yeah, it's a bag. It's got a bag.
In order to make juice, instead of pressing a button on your juicer, you have to go to your smartphone and say, can I have juice now, please?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that just sounds tedious.
Yeah. Google bankrolled this.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. It was a bad idea from the get-go.
It was a terrible idea.
Was this like one of those things like, you know, where you have a singer in American Idol and as soon as they get out, their career crashes? This was like something that was on Shark Tank and they got it out there and everybody went like, no, this is stupid.
Right. Everybody was saying it was going to be great. You know what I mean?
One of the premises behind it was that they were going to, like, you had to auto ship juice bags to your house, and like that was where the money was going to be at,
right?
And so from a capitalistic standpoint, but it seemed like a genius
it's basically
idea.
A juice printer where you buy the juice device.
Right. It's a juice 3D printer.
Cheap,
yeah,
but the juice cartridges
are just wildly expensive.
But it gets worse. Yeah. Another company just went under. They made $1,000 teapot.
Mm-hmm.
What?
That, yeah, it was $1,000 teapot. You had to buy their special tea bags. And you had to put them in your teapot, and the teapot had like firmware to properly brew the tea.
Uh-huh.
And it had to phone home to properly brew the tea, and you had to use your phone to properly brew the tea. We're talking about tea. I'm having tea right now. Oddly, out of a Rush Limbaugh mug, but I put bag in thing.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing that the new Keurigs do. If you're not using an officially licensed, I mean, they're much cheaper, but if you're not using officially licensed pods, it won't make the coffee.
They went under. Yeah. They went under, so they released a firmware update for their teapots that allow you to make tea in their teapots with tea.
Uh-huh.
And not their tea cartridges.
You don't got to use their stuff anymore.
Yeah, you don't have to.
So it just boils water for $1,000.
I mean, it's genius, but it's evil genius.
I have to do another radio show. I have to like start another radio show because I need to like create content and stuff like that for the radio stations. And I'm thinking about, like, I've been kind of divided between like straight politics and straight and like technology. Like, but I think I might go down the middle and just do a show called This Dystopia Sucks. and talk about stuff like this. Because this is a nightmare to me. I don't know why anybody would put up with this.
This is genius to me.
I know. I know how this works. Ah, jeez.
Uh-huh.
You know, and the thing is, they're all doing it with things like making coffee and making tea and making juice. I have it's not a Jack LaLanne juicer, but I have a juicer. You put fruit and vegetables in it. You press a button, you push the plunger down, you get really efficient juice out of the bottom. It literally, this is all stuff that a four-year-old can do.
Right.
It's all really basic stuff. Maybe you don't want them in like playing with spinning blades, but that's on you. I got no problem with it.
Why, when I was a four-year-old, all we were given was a spinning blade. Yeah, a spinning blade and a stick with a string on it. I could amuse myself for hours.
I also don't have children, and some people think those two things are related. but, you know, and it's all this really easy stuff. Why don't you do a vendor lock-in roux maker? Where I can, like, dial up, like a light roux or a dark roux or a brick roux. Because that stuff's hard to do. Roux is a butter flour concoction. It's a sauce. It's very difficult to make. It's a basic ingredient in like Cajun cooking and it can be used in a lot of other places. I used to use blonde roux all the time as a sauce thickener. And they're hard to make. It's a little bit of skill. So if you did that, just a butter and flour cartridge and you say, make me a brick roux, and then it would happen. That would be, you know, okay, you know what? That's something an American can't do. Like right. these sous vide machines. That's not something Americans really do.
Right.
That's not something I trust, but it's also right. something Americans can't do. And that makes sense. But coffee maker, tea maker, like
that's
seriously.
Trivial tasks.
And yeah.
The difference in effort that you're putting into it is just minuscule.
But I'm lazy.
No, hear me out.
What's next? A vendor lock-in oxygen machine? Like, where does this...
Are you counting the
intrigued.
Time that you take to go to the store to buy Keurig pods?
Oh, no. I mean, but I'm already going to be at the store anyways.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, so that's kind of a...
I'm just saying, like, okay, so you open up the machine, you put in the Keurig pod,
uh-huh.
you press the thing down, you press the button, you get your coffee, right?
Right.
Okay, so you open the machine,
right.
you have the reusable Keurig filter in there, right?
Right.
You put a couple scoops of grounds into it, you close the machine. Is it really that big of a difference?
Well, no, not, it's, I mean, it's, there's, it's still labor intensive, there's still things you have to do. But
labor intensive is not words that should even be in this discussion.
Well,
there's nothing labor intensive about it, except for future generations cleaning up all the Keurig pods from our landfills.
I am creating jobs, okay? I'm one of them job creators.
Well, here's the thing. I have a single-use coffee maker that I use.
Okay.
Because if I make a pot of coffee... Or
it just goes bad. Or...
When I was drinking coffee,
sure.
which I'm not anymore, when I would make a pot of coffee, I would drink a pot of coffee.
Right.
Not necessarily good for a person like me. So I got...
This was the main reason why I switched to the Keurig.
Yeah. But the thing
main
is,
reason.
The one I got, it's not a little plastic.
Right.
You know, it basically took coffee tea bags.
Uh-huh.
And if I was in a hurry, I could just put a little bit of coffee in a regular coffee filter and fold it up and slap
it
in the machine
right.
and it
yeah.
would work.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It was completely biodegradable. The coffee filters were, you know, post-recycled material. Why a Keurig and not that kind of thing?
Well, because, so I have, I'll admit, I've never tried one of those single use coffee machines. I'm aware of them, but I've never tried one.
Uh-huh.
But with Keurig, I can change my flavors on a whim. Like on a Saturday, I can drink different coffees. Other people in my house don't like the coffee that I drink and the way I take it. So they can make their own coffee in the way that they like it. It's just, I know it's not a great tool. But it's useful for me, and I know it does. I know it's harmful to the environment, and I shouldn't want to use it. But dang it, I love my Keurig so much.
Okay, you know, there's actually another one of those
this
devices.
Is how civilization ends.
It's gotta go out. It's gotta go out somehow.
When they're Hello Kitty Keurigs, that's when civilization ends. That's my theory. Does the beer?
I am certain that
stay
exists.
Away from Google.
I haven't searched, but I bet it exists.
I guarantee it does.
Yeah, actually, as fellow beer aficionados,
yeah.
Does the beer tender count?
Ooh. I don't know. I mean, making beer is a fairly complex task when you look
yeah.
at everything that goes into it. And if you don't have, say, a shop sink in your house, I could see where it might be attractive to have a
little
several thousand dollar machine
right.
that can make your home brews using your recipes, even though you're not
actually I'm talking about
this
specifically
cooking.
It's a brand, it's a beer tender, it's this
yeah.
little device, it's about the size of a coffee maker,
uh-huh.
and you get those little mini kegs and you drop it in there and it's basically a tap.
Boom boom.
Oh,
actually that yeah, might be more efficient than the standard beer distribution mechanisms.
Are the mini kegs recyclable?
Well, yeah, they're aluminum.
Yeah.
Well, there we go.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we're one up already.
I got to admit, I only got it because I thought maybe I could, you know, fill them with homebrew, but that's just
You can't get into them.
There you can buy kegs that are refillable.
That you can use.
Yeah.
Oh.
Shh, don't tell Heineken.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, if you are listening to us on the air on KTAHLP or KTQALP and other stations to come, this is where we part ways. If you're listening on the podcast, stay tuned. We will have a
For Science.
But
space.
That's all the time we've got today. Our website is Atheist Radio. Our email address is questions@atheist.radio. Our Twitter is AskAnAtheistWA. Our voicemail is 844-753-7842. My flow on this is all broken up with the new domain name. Thank you very much, Tyson.
It's been great.
Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
All right. See you guys next week.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month, we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait, not sacrificing children, that's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist.
After Hours.
I don't know
what the lights got turned off there.
Yeah. No, that's just, this is just Tacoma. That's just a brown.
Oh, gotcha.
Wait, this is After Hours?
Well, not yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Say, keep your pants on, my friend.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can't swear now, right?
No.
Okay, good.
No. Because we're about to do something that's about to go on the air.
Oh.
But I suppose we should apologize to Tyson for, like, totally digging on him for that coffee thing in the last segment.
I don't care.
Ah, man. It was.
And that's your problem, isn't it?
That, yeah.
You just don't care.
I just got so lost in the moment, I realized it became an anti-Tyson show about halfway through. I'm like, that's not where I want to go.
That's all right. As a vegetarian of many years, I'm used to the barrage.
And actually, this week, I don't know if you guys saw, I was on a round table on a Zachrilege podcast.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. It was just a roundtable discussion, and he was just getting people together, and I had been up for about 22 hours, and I noticed that it was in 4 hours,
like,
and I'm like, oh, that'll be fun. Got room for one more? Hey!
Sign me up.
Yeah, and I got to admit, it's probably the most fun I've had doing atheism stuff in a while.
Nice.
Perhaps not counting the Let's Get Mad at Tyson episode I just did. But that was a lot of fun. And I forgot to shout out during the other part of the show, so I do so here. Part of the reason we're doing a fourth segment for the podcast is you guys are going to hear this on the podcast. You're hearing it right now. But Dan's For Science.
Yeah.
And I have to keep reminding myself that it's For Science.
For Science.
Our hope is to, now that we're moving back into radio and specifically into community radio, I'd like to do, especially on KTQA, I'd like to do little sciencey things throughout the day.
As Sounds
sort
good.
Of what I'm doing. And I think Dan is, you know, given that he's, you know, one, the guy I work with, and two, really good at his job, he'd be the
he's beaming right now,
the one to lead the way in that respect. So we have a For Science. Is it fair to say it's with a little bit of a political bent here?
Maybe a little bit of a political bent. Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't you take it away about elephants?
All right. So today's For Science is about elephants. Why elephants? Well, in recent news, they're an excellent example of ecology versus economy. A recent proposal by the president suggests overturning a 2014 restriction on wild elephant trophies, particularly those hunted in Zimbabwe and Zambia. Now, what effect does this have on the species, the individuals, and the local economies? Well, let's examine that. The genre and species classification of elephants is constantly changing and still under debate, but most authorities accept three main distinctions: African savanna elephants, African forest elephants, and Asian elephants. Each of these accepted species may have three or more subspecies, and their classifications may even change by the time this airs. But we can suffice to say, the two African species have been hit the hardest by human activities. In the last 100 years, wild elephants in Africa have dwindled from an estimated population of over 10 million to just 400,000. To be clear, that means 96% of Africa's wild elephants have been killed by illegal hunting, poaching, and loss of habitat. They're certainly not the only animal to have sustained such losses in the last century, as humans continue to change our world, but they are among the most iconic. Their tremendous size, bellowing calls, and prized tusks, and undeniable social intelligence all make them a species of interest for people from all over the world. They're by far the largest land animals, with some bulls reaching heights of 13 feet or 4 meters and weights of over 7 tons or 6,000 kilograms. Their bellows can be heard for up to 6 miles or 10 kilometers in certain conditions, and they can range as low as 10 hertz, well below the range of human hearing, see the episode about infrasound, and as high as 10,000 hertz, almost twice the frequency of a piano's highest note. An elephant's ivory tusks are actually teeth, modified incisors to be precise, and may reach a length of 10 feet, or 3 meters, and a weight of over 100 pounds, or 45 kilograms, per tusk. Their size, loud presence, and valuable ivory has made them choice targets for big game hunters and ivory poachers alike. As I said, African elephants have been hit the hardest, as both males and females grow tusks, while among Asian elephants, typically only males grow tusks. An interesting side effect of the ivory trade is that the average size of elephant tusks has gone down dramatically in the last 100 years, as ivory hunters shoot the elephants with the largest tusks, in effect, selecting those with smaller or no tusks for survival and reproduction. In fact, tuskless males have been documented and appear to be on the rise in all elephant populations. If their iconic presence isn't reason enough to conserve elephants, consider their intelligence. When we think of intelligent social animals, we usually think of humans, chimpanzees, and dolphins. But there's strong evidence to support adding elephants to the list of our intellectual peers. Like apes and dolphins, elephants easily pass the mirror test of self-recognition. Like us and chimpanzees, elephants make and use tools. They're also highly social, and when sick or injured, often receive help from others of their species, even individuals they're not related to. Like orca whales, elephants display matriarchal social structure, that is, the eldest female in a herd is typically the leader, regardless of whether or not she is still producing calves. Adult male elephants tend to stay separate from the herds of females and interact with them mostly during the breeding season. Up until recently, it was believed that the males were asocial loners, but studies now suggest that males travel together in small groups and appear to cooperate with one another in both foraging and addressing potential threats. Elephants are capable of recognizing differences in human languages, as well as differences in our appearances and our technologies as well. In places where elephants are protected, they're less wary of white people in vehicles than they are of indigenous peoples who may hunt them. Conversely, in places where they're often hunted, whites in vehicles are treated as a larger threat than indigenous peoples, even extending to the types of languages spoken. For example, English spoken by many big game hunters versus Ma spoken by the local Maasai people. At least one animal rights group has recently suggested that elephants be granted legal personhood, something that's previously been granted to great apes held in captivity in research in the United States. So, elephants are huge, iconic, and intelligent. They may also have the emotional and intellectual complexity necessary to be legally considered as people, with all the rights and autonomy that comes with it. But there's still more to their value. Elephants are a keystone species. Like us, like salmon, like wolves and certain sea stars, elephants have a much larger effect on their ecosystems than their size or their population would suggest. In uprooting trees and shrubs, elephants help to spread the threatened savanna and grassland habitats. By carrying seeds in their bodies for long distances, they also help to spread and maintain forests. Their rooting at water holes tends to enlarge them, making them available to other species, and even their gouging of the ground with their tusks provides habitat for other creatures that cannot dig their burrows into the hardened upper layer of soil. Their dung is a source of water and nutrition for numerous other animals, plants, and fungi, and their long-ranging behaviors keep the edges of forests and grasslands moving so that neither becomes a dominant feature long enough to deplete the soil. An argument has been made that legalized elephant hunting in some places draws a large income that can be used for conservation in others. Unfortunately, the economics of that argument just don't play out, as there's little evidence that the money leaves the hands of those running such legal hunting operations. Well, that's not the first time elephants have been involved in promoting trickle-down economics, but I digress.
This episode of For Science with Dan Lombardo has been brought to you by KTQA LP 95.3 FM. So new, no motto even. If you would like a different moment of science with a different idea, you can give us a call at 844-753-7842 or visit us at ktqa.org. That's what I'm going to use when I play it on the air.
Oh, great.
So you get to hear it. Yeah.
No.
Beautiful.
And then eventually we might want to set up a website for you so that other radio stations could perhaps carry For Science. I imagine that might do a little better even than Ask an Atheist. But honestly, this is one of the things that I'm actually really surprised that I called in let's say 2016,
yeah,
during certain things where I go, well, there goes the ivory ban.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yep.
Have we seen the inside photos of a certain president of the United States? And it's like, I bet he's mad he can't get his hands on ivory.
You know, he actually had an official statement about that. Well, as much of an official statement as tweeting is for this president. He said that he will consider it further, that everything's being placed on hold because his sons love hunting, but he does not.
I never thought it was about hunting with him.
Right.
That's true. And I imagine that much, you know, speaking of personhood, which I want to get to in a minute,
mm-hmm.
I imagine that the Trump children hunt elephants because they cannot actually participate legally in the most dangerous game.
Well, once you've got political power,
yeah,
you know, one thing that
Hunger Games ain't that far away, yeah, is what I'm saying.
I mean, I was, you know, half an inch or you know, 1.7 millimeters from writing into this about the whole bit about personhood. You know, we shouldn't hunt them because they have personhood, but granted, that really doesn't stop a lot of us from turning weapons against each other either. So
right. Mm-hmm.
Maybe the personhood isn't the best argument for why you shouldn't shoot something.
Right.
Or at least not the most convincing argument.
Well, you know, okay, so to actually bring it to your content, the personhood of elephants really interests me even more than their envious hearing range.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm growing older and I'm actually noticing that I'm starting to lose my high-end hearing, I am envious. But, like, I can't tell if a TV is on anymore.
Huh.
So I identify most strongly as a secular humanist. Mm-hmm. I have actually two problems with that. I don't like either of those words, ultimately. One, because I don't like using secular humanist because we have a secular government.
Right.
And I don't want the link that because both things are secular, that means one is promoting the other. I literally... truly, really do. I'm not saying it just to keep religious people happy.
Right.
I want a government that doesn't care. I want a religion that just doesn't have anything. So the secular thing bothers me. The humanist thing bothers me precisely because of stuff like this, is that I think eventually our concept of personhood, you know, one way or another, and I kind of hope this way first, is going to have to expand beyond our understanding of HSAP-SAP.
Right. This is something that we are kind of seeing a lot of, and, you know, I talk about the Cartesian view a lot and how I think that the Cartesian view is sort of a flaw in scientific thinking. This idea that, because humans know what a human's experience is like, but don't know what any other animal's experience is like, we shouldn't be attributing, you know, any kind of, intentions or emotions or motivations to them. But I would argue that that is sort of unscientific. I mean, this comes from Descartes, hence the Cartesian view. And his thinking was that in order to have an experience, you have to have a mind. And in order to have a mind, you have to have a soul. And only humans had souls. He was a Catholic, and that was sort of his bag.
Right.
So from the get-go, you know, in the very early days of science, this was the understanding. Humans are different. Humans are special. Only humans have souls. But as our understanding of neuroscience improves, as we learn more and more about brains and the similarities and differences between our brains and other animals' brains,
mm-hmm.
or nervous ganglia, even if we're talking about, you know, things like crayfish, what we're finding is that they are much more similar and we are much less different than we thought.
Mm.
So for me, the null hypothesis here isn't only humans are like this, only humans are special. The null hypothesis, I think, and the more responsible idea is we are much more alike than different. So, you know, we've used the Cartesian argument in research a lot to justify inhumane treatment of research animals.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a person who worked in research, I'm not going to say that research shouldn't be done or anything like that because that's ridiculous. We need research. But there have been a lot of things that were excusable because they were done to animals that we would never allow to be done to a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that we learn about the structure of brains, the structure of neurons, I think the more clear it's becoming that our initial understanding or our initial idea about humans being different and special was flawed. So hopefully this is something that I'll see changing within my lifetime in the scientific community.
Yeah.
That if you want to publish a paper, you don't necessarily have to assume the Cartesian view, especially if the paper is providing strong evidence to the contrary.
Mm-hmm. It seems like, you know, if we're doing this, it should this whole science thing, it should be possible to have papers specifically challenging that sort of view.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And isn't that sort of thing being done?
Not so much. Unfortunately, the environment of academic science is really publish or perish.
Right.
And if you want to get published, you must assume the Cartesian view. Every researcher knows this.
Okay.
And so in the process of, you know, editing a paper, let's say I was writing on the examples I like to use the most. Let's say I'm writing on orcas.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about two young males born in 1991, J26 and J27, respectively. The observation is that they spend a lot of time together. It doesn't appear to have a breeding function, but they specifically seek each other out. And they hunt together, they travel together, they seem to vocalize more when the two of them are together.
Right.
Now, if I saw this behavior in human beings, I would say that they are friends.
Mm-hmm.
But if I say they are friends in the paper, it will never get published. What I have to say is that they have developed a long-term non-competitive alliance.
On the other hand, I've seen terminology like that in psychology papers.
Right.
So, I don't know. I guess is the sole problem with the Cartesian view, well, define the Cartesian view. Is it specifically that only is the sum total of the Cartesian view only humans are people?
Basically, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because,
well, it's only humans have a mind. Only humans are self-aware.
People, right.
Only humans
traits.
Are capable of.
Descartes said a lot other stuff.
Right.
Than that.
Yeah. No, he said many brilliant things. We can thank him for a lot of
right.
scientific and mathematical advances. But this was one of those hangups. This is that sort of nobody's perfect.
But you know. If you're looking for a criticism of science from people who put a lot of stock in science like us,
mm-hmm.
this is a big one, is that there seems to be this inherent bias that we have to treat animals differently because only humans have a soul.
Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah. A little outdated, too.
Now,
well, I would think so, but I think certain Alabama soon-to-be senators, anyway, go yeah. on. I could also slam my head against the table.
Yeah, there are a few things in academic science that sort of need to change along those lines, and one has to do with making it available. I mean, most people don't read scientific papers because scientific papers are written to be deliberately chewy with as technical a language as possible.
Yeah.
If you don't
Look
use that
cool
technical language, just like if you don't use the Cartesian view, even if you explain things just as thoroughly, you will not get published because you didn't use that technical language. And this kind of has its origins in science being something that was basically carried out by wealthy European white noblemen.
Now, as a non-nobleman sitting here, and probably the lamest one in the room here for this conversation, the question I would have to ask is the reason why, you know, let's go back to your example about J26 and 27.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Is the reason why they're scared to use the word they are friends because they don't like it or because they fear being mocked?
Probably a little from column A, a little from column B.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a danger in over anthropomorphizing and saying these animals are exactly like us. These are their motivations.
Look at them. Right.
But I think there's just as much danger in going the other way.
That was right. a direction I was going to go in. Mm-hmm. Is it? You can say they are like friends, but I think it would be difficult to say they are friends because there's so much about, you know, the cetacean psyche that we don't understand.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They right. might not be friends. They might be insulting each other all the time.
They right. might
yeah.
be.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why
or
they're yelling.
They
so
might
much
be
when
insulting each other all the time, and they are friends.
Right.
We have
yeah.
no idea.
Yeah. Maybe they're
I
the
have
comedians.
No idea what any of that is
they're
like.
They're comedians
yeah.
of the group.
Right.
They could
yeah.
be. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe this is whale open mic.
Yeah.
yeah.
Right. Or maybe their feelings transcend language. Or you know.
Oh, let's not.
A little bit Sedona there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, let's not call them friends.
Let's call them. What was it again? I love that. That was.
They've developed a long-term non-competitive alliance.
That's, yeah. You know, that's actually an accurate description of my relationship with pretty much everyone. I was gonna say Becky, but you're right. It is everybody, and that's all the time we have for the podcast extra bit of this episode. I'm not gonna go through the credits again. I can thank Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield for the music on this episode. I can definitely do that. See you guys next week. Thank you, guys.